Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, welcome. Hello to everyone out there. And I'm super excited about the conversation that we're going to have today. You know, we talk a lot today about authentic leading and living, and I'm a true advocate of this. But each of us might be bringing a little bit of our past with us. Now, that might sound like a good thing, and sometimes it is, but there are some times where there may be something else going on. What if lurking in our subconscious are those pesky past experiences that plant themselves like unwanted roots? They plant themselves in the subconscious, and just when we least expect it, a trigger happens, and boom, there's an overreaction, a fight or flight, or something of that nature. You know what? Today on our show, we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about it because our guest today says it's possible to heal those unseen wounds. Even at work. I'm ready, Marae's ready, Ross Jones is ready, and our special guest is ready to lead above the grind. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda show. You know, those little funny quotes that come in at the end of our graphic are just hilarious. That one was, in case you missed it, it was "Sip Me Baby One More Time." And if you don't recognize it, I think it was like a song or something. "Sip Me Baby One More." Okay, I won't sing. So. All right. So thanks for joining us and tuning in to the Coffee with Rhonda show. We are your cup full of inspiration, revelation, and wit for today's savvy leaders. And before we get to our introductions, a couple of things I'd like for you to do. Visit coffeewithrondashow.com. That's our YouTube channel. And please subscribe and follow us because we've got lots of great content for you today and in the future coming up. Also, right now, take a moment to like and share the video. So even if you're watching on replay, stop right now. Like the video and share it because I promise you there will be someone out there who needs to hear this conversation today. So with all that being said, my name is Rhonda Y. Williams and I'm your host for the show. And I am what I like to call an ARF goal or a recovering stressed out leader. And what that means to me is in the past, I was focused, I was stressed, I was overwhelmed. But today I found a sense of freedom and knowing that I have a choice and I have control. I can set boundaries. So to learn more about the work we do in the world, you can visit atgleadership.com. So I have my I lead above the grind cup, right? I need a constant reminder, lead above the grind. So I have my cup, and in my cup, I have coffee with just a little bit of hazelnut, sugar-free syrup. It's sugar-free. So I'm kind of trying to be good. I am trying to get back to normal after a couple of weeks in the island of Anguilla. I'm still getting my feet set and getting back to the sense of things, but I'm happy to be here with all of you. That's me. That's what's happening in my world. So let's get to our super caffeinated co-host, and then we will introduce our special guest. So Ms. Roz Jones, it is such a pleasure to see you. Good morning, love.
Good morning, everybody. For those who don't know who I am, I'm Roz Jones, the CEO and owner of Jacksonville's Best Caregivers, where we help expand the life of your loved one. Why do I do it? I do it because I love my job. And I do it because I want to help the caregiver to reduce that SOS on their journey, which is being stressed, overwhelmed, and providing safety and security. When you can't do it all, give us a call. My water is over there, and I'm going to go run and get it in a minute. But that's what I'm drinking is water.
Awesome. Yes, thank you, Ross. Awesome. It's great to see you back for another season. It's just always a pleasure. Good evening to you, Marae.
Hello, good morning to all of you, but good evening on my side. This is Marae, the greatness engineer. I'm still very jealous of Rhonda, but I'm gonna be try to be happy today. I am, like I said, the greatness engineer. I'm all about greatness, trying to help people to understand that they have greatness inside of them, and most importantly for them to step into this greatness. I am the founder and CEO of FT Energy Resources, so which means that I'm a diplomat of STEM, STEM standing for science, technology, engineering and mathematics and energy. And I help women to get more visibility in those sectors. So that's me. And today I'm drinking coffee because I have to stay away. It's quite late on my I want to really participate, so I will be pumped up today.
All right, everybody, look out. You know, we're in for a good one. Marae's got coffee in her cup this late. She's usually drinking something soothing like chamomile tea or water. So, great. Thank you so much for joining us,
the bougie Marae stuff. And yeah, she always drinks that bougie tea. That's what she does.
the bougie tea.
Oh, the bougie tea.
All right, and so let's introduce our special guest for today. So I'm super excited to welcome Susan Schmidt Winchester to the show. Susan, it has been an executive in HR for many, many years, worked with some amazing companies. She's also the co-author of a book that's called Healing at Work, A Guide to Using Career Conflicts to Overcome Past, to Overcome Your Past and Build the Future You Deserve. Super excited to welcome you to the show. Susan, just give us a little bit about you and the work that you do in the world. And then don't forget to tell us what you have in your
Sure. Company. Well, thank you all. It's such a pleasure to be here. I love your show. And just a quick me in a nutshell, I am, as Rhonda said, a corporate HR professional. I've been in the HR corporate world for 35 years, and it's been an amazing career. 15 of those years, I've been the chief HR officer for two Fortune 500 companies. And I think HR is my middle name. So, and then what I have a very large cup with me, which is filled with pumpkin spice coffee, lots of cream, and a scoop of protein powder.
Oh, yum. Pumpkin. Yeah. That sounds delicious. All right. I'll have to put that on my list. Susan, I always get great ideas from those out there watching as they share with their drinking. So thank you so much for being here. I'm excited to dive in just a minute. I want to say good morning first to a couple of folks. Mom is out there. Good morning, Mom. So she said she's ready for another inspiring show today, and she has strawberry banana smoothie in her cup with fresh blueberries. I'm not going to repeat my line. Maybe I will, that I say every show, Susan. My mom has the best stuff in her cup every time she's tuning in.
Love it. Love the moms out there.
Absolutely. And so Regina's also out there. Hey, sis, all the way from San Antonio. Welcome. It's her pleasure and honor to be here. And then we also have someone on LinkedIn. It looks like you haven't authenticated on LinkedIn. So they're only showing us LinkedIn user. I'm sorry, but they said nice, lead above the grind. And then Regina says that she has water in her cup. Okay, so I want to get started today because we've got a lot to dive into. And I want to begin, Susan, with your opening quote. And if you will, I want you to share a little bit about us. So let me share that with everyone first. And then I want you to tell us about this quote and why it's so important to you. And it has come to be so important in the work that you and Martha have really undertaking in this book. So here's the quote. So the quote says, "The rest of your life is yours." It's simple, it's to the point, and it's powerful. So Susan, can you tell us a little bit about that and why this quote, it really started to resonate in the work that you're doing?
So the quote is all about the fact that we really do own the rest of our lives. But what most of us don't realize is that we are showing up in our careers. You know, I talked about my 35 years in the corporate HR world. I spent most of those years like a hamster on one of those wheels, going to work every single day, trying to prove myself, going home at the end of the day and essentially doing a performance review of myself daily. And usually it went something like this. I shouldn't have done that in that meeting. I can't believe I said that. I can't believe I didn't say something in the meeting. And at the end of the night, I would just feel like, you know, if I was grading myself, I'd give myself a D minus. And then I get back up the next day and I go into work and again, just trying to prove myself. And what I didn't know at that time was that 2/3 of us, shown by research by the Centers for Disease Control and Kaiser Permanente, that 2/3 of us came from a past, a childhood, where we experienced some negative things. And there's been an amazing study. This goes back many years. It's been duplicated and replicated in different countries that nearly 2/3 of adults experienced at least one significant trauma when they were little before the age of 18. And what I didn't realize, first of all, I never thought of my childhood as dysfunctional. I knew people had it far worse than I did. But I went to work every single day, not realizing how much my limiting belief about myself, which was my limiting belief, my biggest one, is that I'm not good enough. And that I carried that with me every single day and would end up exhausted. A lot of high achieving perfectionists and people pleasers like myself use unhealthy habits to self-soothe in trying to manage the anxiety that goes along with never feeling like we're doing enough in the workplace. And mine was Chardonnay. So I was using alcohol to try to suppress all those feelings of not feeling good enough. And I'm extremely grateful to God and to some very good friends that this month I will, you know, planning to celebrate my 19 years of sobriety. And so the quote, "The rest of your life is yours." And what Martha and I talk about in the book, Healing at Work, is that we don't have to live what I call the unconscious wounded career path, where those negative limiting beliefs about ourselves, our old coping strategies, we're like carrying them to work every day like extra baggage. We don't have to live that career. We have a choice and we can actually step on to the conscious healing career path. And that creates this optimistic, hopeful experience that truly the rest of our life is ours. And that's the path that we teach in the book.
Wow. Thank you, Susan. That's really powerful. And I know that so many of us can relate to showing up every day, carrying that baggage to work. Roz and Marae, I want to first say hi to Favor. Hey, Favor, thank you so much for typing in your name, coming in from Facebook, and she's joining us from Nigeria. So it's always great to see you, Favor. I want to just ask you both, have you seen this in yourselves at any point? Like, do you think that there were moments in your career, it may not be now, may be in the past, where you were showing up carrying your baggage from the past in a very wounded way? And so, Roz, let me start with you and answer that. And then, Marae, I'll come to you.
Honey, child, yes. Because as women, I had to prove myself. You know, I had to, when we were wearing suits to work, you know, I had to put the suit on, I had to put the girdle on, I had to put on pantyhose. That's why I hate doing it now, because we had to fit into this mold. I didn't know at the time I had options. And what Susan is talking about is the options that were never told to us, because automatically as a woman, we were put in a box. If you got pregnant, you can't take on additional responsibilities. If you get pregnant, you know, you're not going to stay on the job. You're going to quit. You know, if you're a caregiver, you know, and we've talked about this, you know, women, they think women can't multitask. But however, if we're pregnant, that shows that we can take on additional responsibilities. We can still be productive. We do still have ideas. And so a lot of times we have put ourselves in a place, in a box where, okay, I can't tell anybody I'm a caregiver. If I get pregnant, I have to plan it around some big event. You know, I can't get pregnant this year because we're having some big corporate event going on. I have to wait till next year to get pregnant.
Right.
I can't go on vacation like everybody. These are the things that have been put on us, because I can even remember, we've talked about this in previous shows. You know, my mother used to say, when you get the job, you know, when you go to Rome, act like the Romans. So that means whatever they did, you were supposed to imitate that. But I was miserable as hell. Mm-hmm. I did a good job. I'm good at what I do, but I was miserable. Wow. Yep. And I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, no, thank you, Roz. And I think one of the things, and Susan and I were talking about this before the show, is we all bring something a little bit different to this conversation, right? So thank you for sharing that, because I can sort of relate to a lot of those moments as well. What about you, Marae? How has this shown up in your life?
Yeah, I can relate, you know, and for me, it's more about, you know, coming from a very humble beginning. My parents had to really fight, you know, to really find their place, get their education. My dad was the first person to actually get a great education and really sacrifice a lot of, you know, of his income, energy for us to go to the best schools, because for him, it was about, you know, being excellent, continuing this legacy that he started. So you get actually prisoner, because you actually looking for perfection. And that's what I was, you know, doing all the time, trying to be the best, trying to make sure I don't deceive my dad, I don't deceive my family, because they made so many sacrifices that you're like, no, I don't want to be the one, you know, having them being, you know, not being happy and regretting all the effort that they, you know, they had. So to a point where sometime I was in jobs that, you know, I wanted to quit, but I'm like, this is a good job. And this is what they see as, you know, me as a, you know, someone who succeeded. So I can't actually let go. I had to continue. I had to push through. And, you know, with coaching, you know, I reached a point where it was more about, you know what, you know, you had this platform, you had this opportunity. Now it's about me. It's about, what do I want to do? Where do I want to be? And it doesn't mean that, you know, you actually let your parents down. So it has been a very, you know, difficult, you know, journey in that sense, where you always want to really be the best, perfection, because you don't want to deceive your parents who actually worked so hard, you know, to give you the life that you have. So wow. Definitely a very, very difficult, very difficult thing to, I mean, difficult shift to have, actually.
Yeah, no, Marae, I get that. I want Susan to respond. Mom says, Susan, with all those years in business and 19 years of sobriety, I must say you still look as if you're in your 20s.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. That is amazing. I love that. I will take that away. And actually this year I'll turn 60. So I'm happy to hear that. It's really nice. Yep.
Wow. And so
wait a minute. She said she turned 60.
I will, yep, in October. I'm 59 right now. I'll be 60 in October. Yeah. I'm telling you, it's healing. I heard a woman speak, and I'm not going to remember her last name. I think it's Patrice Washington. She was in one of the training videos I was watching earlier this week, and she said something that so resonated for me, which was, the quality of our life is a direct reflection of the healing journey we're taking. Mm-hmm. And I could not agree with that more, that, you know, when we're living that unconscious wounded career path, we are constantly beating ourselves up. We're stressed. I had a lot of anxiety. For a lot of people, there's depression. There are health issues. For me, addiction. That's true with a lot of people. But getting into this place of becoming much more conscious of how much I was carrying my past with me at work. And this isn't about blaming caretakers. I think my parents did the best job they could. But it's about becoming aware of how often we get stuck in old ways of responding, especially when we're in conflict. So, yeah, I thank you for whoever wrote that. That was really sweet.
Yeah. So we do get stuck in our old ways. Mm-hmm. Susan, what I often see and hear is people begin to believe that the way that they're responding is them. Right. Mm-hmm. This is just me. This is how I am, like it or leave it. This is who I am. What I hear from you and what I know from my own experience is that that is who we are because that's who we practice being, right?
Yeah.
And if we are dealing with those triggers, I want you to talk about what is it like? You had a term, I think it was ASDP.
Yes.
Yes. And talk a little bit about that for us.
Sure. So ASDP is a term that Martha and I came up with to describe those of us who grew up with some negative thing that happened when we were little, younger. And just to elaborate on that. So the study that I'm referring to is a study that was by CDC and Kaiser Permanente. And it was a pretty basic survey. They've done a lot of additional surveys that have validated it with a little bit more robustness. But they basically asked 17,000 adults to answer, did you experience one of these 10, what they called the adverse childhood experiences, also known as the ACEs? And anybody can take the ACE survey and get your result just by Googling it. And what they were shocked to find out was that of the 17,000 people, nearly two-thirds indicated they experienced at least one. And these are things like physical, emotional, sexual abuse, neglect, violence in the home, mental illness in the home, addiction in the home. These are serious adverse childhood experiences. 40% experienced two or more. And the reality is that we don't really have a term to describe those of us that experienced ACEs or had some, it doesn't even have to be an ACE. There are a lot of things that are traumatic that aren't included in the ACEs. What's important to understand is that, you know, there aren't really names out there. And, you know, there's ACOA, Adult Children of Alcoholics is one, but that was really narrow. And so Martha and I came up with this term, Adult Survivor of a Damaged Past, which basically means that we are all adults today and we have an opportunity to step into our highest functioning adult self every single moment of the day. Unfortunately, many of us are not doing that. We're kind of staying stuck in some of those old behaviors that I was talking about. We'll talk more about that in a minute. AS stands for survivor, which to me is a word of resilience. It means that we've come through difficulty and challenge. But through that, we can actually grow and become stronger. The D stands for damage, which just really means that there was some dysfunctional dynamic happening, but often that we carry damaged beliefs about ourselves. I have been blown away by how high, you know, very successful business leaders, executives, entrepreneurs, founders share with me some of their damaged beliefs about themselves. I don't deserve good. I can't trust anybody. I deserve to get into trouble. The list, I can't do anything right. You know, we get these messages that we take about ourselves and we carry them with us that even though we're fully functioning in the professional adult world, these damaged beliefs are causing a lot of dysfunction. But there is hope, which we'll talk about too. And then the P stands for the past. You know, ASDP, we're from a past, but that's the past. But we need to really understand the effect of that past so that we can live in the current, in our current life and truly experience the rest of our life as ours. The other quote that Martha and I have is damage is not doomed. In other words, it doesn't matter what you came from, what your past was, what challenges you had, that it's good to understand and recognize and appreciate what happened. But as a result of that, going back to that word survivor, us ASDPs come into our professional world with a significant amount of gifts because of the trauma and experiences that we had. We can read a room. You know, we can walk into a room and read the energy. I can read and tell you if there's an angry person near me because my dad had some issues with rage. I can smell it a mile away. I'm really good at that. And I can also gauge what the emotion is in the room. We're also really good when there's chaos because we've dealt with chaos. We tend to stay calm. We tend to be able the ones that can kind of provide guidance to what's going on. And we also are very empathetic, you know, because we've experienced our own pain enables us to be more compassionate to others as we learn how to be compassionate to ourselves. So ASDP is just a term to capture the totality of trauma and the experiences people had, and also to realize that we can break through that.
Thank you, Susan. Man, so powerful. Marae, did you want to add something?
I think it's very powerful what, you know, Suzanne just, you know, shared, is that those trauma are actually there sometime, and we don't even realize that they are there. We are on autopilot, basically. It's part of us, and we don't actually know that we are, you know, a victim of, you know, those trauma. And it is really important to be conscious of, you know, certain things. Sometimes take some, you know, step back and start to analyze, you know, things that we do, things how we've actually, you know, gone for, you know, for a situation, yeah, how we relate to people, just to understand, you know, how these things connect with what we've lived before, and the possible trauma that we might not know we have. So it is really, you know, powerful, and it's hard. It's really hard to do that, and that's why, you know, we have a lot of people. And it's painful. I think that's the part that is really difficult to manage. It's painful. So people tend to, you know, when it's so painful, they just, you know, go through, they prefer to go to become addicted to something. It can be work, it can be alcohol, it can be, you know, using violence, anything, just to get, you know, this, trying to get this trauma out of, you know, out of their mind and out of their body. So really important, I think, to know and how to really detect that we are under, you know, the influence of those trauma.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And it's what I want to talk about is, like, how does it show up? Like what happens to us when we are bringing that baggage? And a couple of things come to mind, and I know that you're going to touch on these, Susan, but I also want you to bring in, is toxic positivity, can that be a part of this as well? So we're talking about careers, but I keep thinking about life, right? I keep thinking about carrying this luggage around in your life, where things are just not going well. You don't know why, but you keep reacting the same way. You keep doing the same things and you keep getting the same results, but nothing changes. So after we do our greatness minute, I would like you to talk a little bit, Susan, about what happens to us, like, mm-hmm, when we are carrying this undesirable baggage around with us. So let's do our greatness minute.
Hello, this is Mireille, the Greatness Engineer, with you today. Today, I want to focus my message on the fact that there's no shortage of opportunity to make a difference. For me, greatness is about making a difference. I know that we live in a time of, you know, challenges. It's disruptive. It's very adverse. But it's not just about that. Because greatness is within the capability of every person, as long as the person is open to seeing the opportunity and trust that they can make, you know, a difference and be great. So that's really where, you know, your greatness should come in. Whatever is happening around you, whatever the challenges, whatever the environment, make sure you see the opportunity and in behind this challenge and behind this problem and behind this adversity that you face. It's all about you. It's all about you trusting that you can make a difference. It's all about you trusting that you can be great. So thank you for being with us today. See you next week.
What I love so much about that is it's so perfectly aligned with choice, right? Susan, you talked, mm-hmm, about that earlier. So help us identify when, yes, we're carrying this child with us.
Yes. So, and by the way, a really good point that I want to make is I am not a mental health worker or a therapist or anything like that. And the reason why I talk about the workplace is because I am a career and workplace expert, having worked in the corporate world for so many years. So that was an important framing I meant to mention. So what happens? So we're going about our day and all of a sudden something happens with generally something that someone else did or something we did. And all of a sudden it feels like there's been a crash. And Martha and I, in fact, it's on the cover of the book. We use the bumper car image to reflect and represent workplace conflict. Yeah, exactly. Do you remember when you were going to the fair, maybe when you were little, and they had the bumper car ride where you'd get in the little cars and ride around, and you know, your friends might bump into you, you'd laugh, and then all of a sudden someone sneaks up behind you and slams into the back of your car, and your whole body is like this, right? You've just had a bumper car crash. Well, Martha and I talk about workplace conflict feels like a bumper car crash. Where, and it could be lots of different things. I have so many examples of bumper car moments, but typically what will happen is something will occur. Someone will say something or not say something, do something or not do something. And we have an interpretation, and it goes through the filter of our past, which is all of a sudden we feel the fight, flight, or freeze. It's like our body goes into a physiological response. For me, I go into freeze. And I'll give you a real life bumper car moment that happened to me many years ago, just to bring this to life. It'll feel like my heart rate's elevated. It feels like an elephant sitting on my chest. And I just want to cry. I just feel this fear, like immediate. It's just a physiological response that I'm in danger. And then almost automatically, my limiting beliefs come popping to the front of my head. Oh my God, I am really not good enough. What just happened proves that I am not good enough. And then sort of in this anxiety fueled response, my response is perfectionism. How can I be as perfect as possible to try to mitigate this reaction of whatever's happened to me in the workplace? Or people pleasing, like tap dancing. What can I do to make this person happy so that they'll stop being angry at me? For other people, I become the people pleaser. Other people become the bully. We've all worked with and experienced bullies in our workplaces. So some people get really aggressive. Their response for when they feel triggered, this emotional trigger, the bumper car crash has happened, is to become very aggressive. And then other people, so that's the fight, right? Mine is freeze, the fight mode. We've all seen that behavior. And then there's also the fight, flight, freeze. There's the flight. Some people will literally do everything they can to stay invisible. I worked with somebody years ago at one of my companies who told me after 30 years of working at that company that she had never spoken until spoken to first. So she literally was hiding as her protection strategy. And so what happens when these, you know, we get emotionally triggered is all of a sudden, all of our wiring in our brain, the neural pathways in our brain are interpreting the present day moment as if something is happening, but it's being fueled from what happened to us in the past. Mm-hmm. It's like our past is gasoline on the in-the-moment experience. And so we tend to have an overreaction to what's occurred. We know we're in a bumper car moment because we're worried about it for a long time. I'll give you a real quick example of a bumper car moment that happened to me. And there's a million that happen every single day. We could spend hours talking about bumper car moments at work. This was early in my career. I was a manager and I was leading a team and we had a major project. The project was very successful. And my boss, who had this little statue that she would sit on her desk every day. And on one side of the statue was Glenda the Good Witch. And if you flipped the statue around, it was the Wicked Witch of the West. And she would turn the statue based on her mood, which is not a good leadership. Talk about leadership in the grind. You know, you don't want a boss who's basically announcing their mood to you every day. And she called me in to tell me that my team had won the President's Award of Excellence, which was very exciting. I think I was 26 or 27 years old. And then she proceeded to tell me that I wasn't going to be getting the award, which was very confusing because I led the team. And, you know, so I didn't understand it. She didn't really have a good answer. It was very vague. So the next day I went to her manager and just said, you know, if there's something I did wrong, you know, I was just trying to, because I didn't get much from my manager. So I went to her boss. Today, knowing what I know about sort of how corporate policies and practices work, I probably wouldn't have done that. But the next day, my boss called me back into her office. The Wicked Witch was sitting really close to the edge of the desk, looking at me really intently. And she proceeded to go into a full-on rage, screaming at me. How dare you go to my boss? And you talk about a bumper car crash. I froze. I can remember instantly feeling like I felt hot tears streaming down my face. I was scared. And the one thing that I could think about was I deserve to be in trouble. That was one of my limiting beliefs. And in that moment, all I wanted to do was to run away. I wanted to run up to my, you know, when I was little, when my dad was screaming at my mom, my little sister Nancy and I and our little dog Dodger would run upstairs and hide under the bed. And that's all I wanted to do. And so that was a major bumper car crash. There are much smaller ones that happen as well. But just to tell you what happens is something happens and there's a crash. We interpret it through our old lens. I basically left that organization not long after it because I felt so embarrassed. I felt like it was my fault. Now, looking back at it through my highest functioning adult self versus my adapted child trying to figure out what I did wrong and why I deserved it. That's what we teach in the book is how to step into our highest adult functioning selves at work when we're triggered. But that's basically what happens, Rhonda. There's something that happens. And sometimes the other person doesn't even know they've caused a crash. Sometimes we do things and all of a sudden someone's really upset with us. You know, these bumper car moments can happen in a lot of different ways. But the process is we have a physiological reaction, fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, which is people pleasing. Our limiting beliefs are like raging in our minds, throwing gasoline on how we're feeling about ourselves and our reaction, and we go into our old patterns.
Wow.
And typically that, you know, from the cost of this is the unconscious wounded career path when we're constantly responding unconsciously. Murray, you said it, we're not aware of how we're reacting. We're just reacting. And, you know, the costs are significant. Not for me. One of the major costs that really still to this day upsets me is I was so worried about proving myself and getting validated at work by authority figures that when I wasn't at work, I was worried about work. And so when my sons, who are now in their 20s, were growing up, I wasn't present for them. I was neglecting them. And I'm very lucky that we have a good relationship today, but it had a big impact on them. Mm-hmm. That I was so consumed because of my limiting beliefs about myself that it could have eroded the relationships completely. I certainly have a failed marriage to show for it. Because I was not, my focus was all on my neediness to be validated. My limiting belief or the broken belief I had was that it was everybody else's job to determine my worth, particularly men in authority. And my job was to be as perfect as possible and the people pleaser to try to avoid anything that would suggest that I wasn't good enough.
Wow. Well, Susan, pause for a moment because I want to dial into this a bit. Fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And I want to ask Murray and Roz, mm-hmm. when you find yourself in that moment of trigger and stressful situation, what's your tendency? Like, which of those, do you have a pattern of which of those you tend to lean to? Murray, let's start with you. Do you tend to go to fight, flight, freeze, or fawn?
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's a pattern, definitely. And one thing that was triggering me, especially when I started to work in the energy sector with men, is, you know, the feedback, you know, especially a negative feedback. For me, the negative feedback was just a trigger for me to just, you know, thinking that because I was a woman, I was not good enough. I was starting to be really, you know, very emotional and also not really believing in myself because of this negative. And sometimes the feedback had nothing to do with my gender, nothing to do with any of it, my color. No, because I had, you know, that in my mind, as soon as there was a negative feedback, I would just shift into this emotional state. And what I would do is really try to overcome everything, work like, you know, like mad at, you know, stay at work late. And yet it was not about that. You know, mm-hmm. After a while, I just understood that it was not about that. It was just me having those, you know, unconscious bias, thinking that everything negative that was going to come out of this male, you know, Caucasian person is actually judging me. As you know, judging my gender and judging my race, so it was a big battle at the beginning. But then I, you know, obviously understood that it's not about me. It's really, you know, it's actually about me, how I actually take this, you know, this feedback and what I do with it and how it connects with, you know, whatever belief that I have or the past that I have. So that's that can be really strong, really, really strong.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really powerful when you look at those patterns and see mm-hmm. what your immediate reaction is. Roz, which one do you lean to? Do you lean to fight, flight, freeze, or fawn? I can't imagine you going to fawn. Okay, so let me just put that out there. Roz is not a fawner. I can't
Look, all things are possible. Let me say that. My biggest thing for me.
We're gonna have Jenkins.
Yeah. That alter ego comes out, Susan. We'll talk about that after the show. But nonetheless, my biggest trigger for me is when I've done something wrong and you don't tell me about it. And then when you tell me about it, it's sometimes 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, mm-hmm. 6 months, almost a year before you tell me. So I haven't had the opportunity to correct.
Right.
I haven't had, you know, been afforded the opportunity to say, okay, let's fact check this.
Right.
You know, let's bring all parties together. Those are the things that trigger me and push me into working more. If that makes sense.
It feels unfair.
Because now I'm trying to figure out on my own, okay, when did this happen? Why wasn't I afforded the opportunity to change? Because I love change. Tell me, because, you know, just like what Susan was talking about earlier and Mariah, the opportunities, you didn't give me a chance to fix it. You went on your own tangent with, you know, with your group of people and you didn't come to Roz and say, hey, this is what's going on. And so that's the thing that bothers me in the workplace. Sometimes things go on and mm-hmm. people sit in those little groups, in those little cubby holes and just talk, or they take it to HR and they never get, you know, give you a chance to fix it or whoever. It might not even be HR, but I'm just using that since Susan is here. So, you know, that's the thing that probably sometimes pushes me to work harder, or it could push me into a fond. And I'm quiet and I'm like, really? Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't give me a chance. So, you know, there's one thing where it's brought to your attention, and then there's another place where it's not brought to your attention, but the damage is still collateral. There's still that bumper car.
Right. Yep.
So, well, thank you, Roz. It's so interesting how it shows up for us, and it feels like we all get to that point of, and I could be misinterpreting this, but it feels like that we're fighting, that overworking, that perfectionist mm-hmm. is a way of fighting. And for me, okay, so I'm a Taurus, okay? So I tend to go into that fight mode, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to fight. I want to figure it out. And now I'm trying to prove myself, right? You're wrong and I'm right. And here's all of my data points to prove, because I'm also very data-driven, right? So I've got mm-hmm. that part about me that I'm working with where I'm really trying to figure out and to prove to other people that this is not accurate, right? Mm-hmm. So all of that type of fighting, as I listen to us now, it's exhausting, Susan.
It's exhausting.
It is exhausting.
It's distracting. It's destructive. The effect that it has on us, you know, we don't even think about how much it's affecting us in negative ways. And we just keep repeating it day after day after day. And that's that feeling of this is never going to change. But actually, we are able to change our brains and how we respond and how we think about these moments and ourselves, truly because of the science of neuroplasticity, which is basically the changeability of the brain. The brain is malleable. We can change it. And also the amazing research around positive psychology. And that's that hopeful, the rest of our life is ours. We don't have to stay on that unconscious, wounded, you know, to your point, Rhonda, the painful. It's a painful place to be. And that's why, you know, it wasn't easy to put myself out there in the book because there's some pretty open stories about my own issues. But working with my personal coach, Celine DaCosta, she really helped me realize that my why for doing this work was to help people stay out of that place of pain and suffering and dysfunction. And that I wish somebody had taught me these principles 35 years ago, because I believe deeply that I could have had the same achievements professionally and personally without all that pain, Rhonda, that you mentioned. And again, neuroplasticity and some positive psychology and some of the techniques and tools that, I teach can help us start to become much more aware of when we're triggered, how we're being informed by our past, and how we can take that and actually change it and respond differently with some pretty simple techniques.
Susan, one of the things, and I mentioned this earlier and I forgot to dive back into it, is this whole concept of toxic positivity.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And I struggle. At first I struggled a bit with, I'm like, what does that even mean? But yeah, as I began to wrap my arms around it, it actually is a thing and it can be a real challenge. And I'm wondering if that can be a part of that child where we refuse to acknowledge when there are challenges, when there are things that we need to deal with, we push them away and it's, no, the sun is shining and everything's great. When there's a big, huge hole in the middle of the street that you can't get around and you go, oh no, it's not there, it's fine. Is that a part? Could that be a part of this also?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a really good insight in that many of us show up at work and most people would never know how much pain we're carrying.
Right.
And so we're really good at creating these outward masks, the positivity. You know, it's when you know, we find out that a colleague has committed suicide who we always thought was upbeat. You know, there's so much more beyond what people are experiencing, sort of that face-to-face experience of one another at work, than what the reality would suggest, which again, you know, nearly two-thirds of us dealt with an extreme adverse childhood experience. And, you know, I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, I didn't have one of those ACEs, Susan, but I have a lot of limiting beliefs about myself. I had an overbearing parent or, you know, a super critical parent. And so they have some of these same experiences, but we all learn how to function at work. You know, I'm the eternal optimist. Nobody would have ever guessed that I was having this much pain and anxiety behind the scenes. So I think toxic positivity summarizes exactly what the unconscious wounded career path is all about.
Wow.
I want to ask Susan a question. Susan, sure. A lot of times when we come to work from home, bringing whatever we're bringing from home to work, a lot of times we are scared to even say anything publicly. Mm-hmm. We're scared because then what is our boss going to think about us? Are we going to be ridiculed? And then don't even talk about the mental health piece.
Right.
I'm scared to tell you that I'm feeling, possibly feeling suicidal, or I'm feeling depressed, or I'm feeling isolated. And, you know, you're scared to go to your leaders. And right. This is not only at home, but then this is also even in the church or even in your family. You're scared to go to these leaders because,
right.
And in, I'm just going to say in the African-American community, it always is whatever goes on in this house stays in this house.
Yep.
So, you know, we're scared to say anything because I'm scared, you know, in the back of my head, my mama going to come get me if I say something about what's going on at home.
Completely understand. Mm-hmm. It's such an important point is that so many ASDPs aren't talking about it because of, you know, everything they were taught when they were little, you know, keep the secrets of the house, protect the family reputation, dismiss and minimize whatever is happening as if mm-hmm. it's normal. I mean, there are a lot of things that we all do. I think your point's great, and it really depends on your relationship with your leader. I think companies are becoming much more attuned to how important mental wellness is. I just had an experience with 70 other chief HR officers at a very well-known company to talk about how wellness fuels everything that companies want. Mental wellness fuels performance, it fuels yes. productivity, it fuels relationships, it fuels engagement. And so I think companies are on this journey. They're at different places on this journey. I know my company, we offer a lot of support to people with, you know, different opportunities for seeking support from therapists. We have, you know, virtual capability to do that. And, you know, it really depends on your relationship with the people that you're working with. I would never want anyone to put themselves in a vulnerable position at work because they feel like they need to explain. I'm hoping that leaders are becoming much more aware of how much pain and suffering there is and spending more time with teams, taking the time, not necessarily to delve deep into someone's experience outside of work, but to at least acknowledge, you know, even without saying what happened, you can let people know, look, I've got some things happening personally that are significantly affecting my energy. And I just need to let you know that. And, you know, people genuinely want to support one another at work. I believe that. But you got to gauge whether or not you feel comfortable sharing it. I would never want someone to expose something they didn't feel comfortable sharing. Yeah, but my hope is that companies are moving in this on this mental wellness journey, realizing how important it is to their teams and their employees that we have to take it very seriously, which is why I'm on a mission at my company and basically any other company that wants or organization that wants me to talk my keynote on healing at work, because I think it's a breakthrough way of looking at mental wellness at work. And some of it, to your point, there's a lot of stigma around some of these topics. You know, so encouraging leaders, I'm doing this, encouraging leaders to be more open and vulnerable with their teams to create more of an experience from a culture standpoint that lets people know that they're not alone. And I was listening to Oprah's new book. Oh, I love her new book, What Happened to You, with Dr. Bruce Perry. Mm-hmm. And in it, Dr. Perry, who's a world-renowned expert on neuroscience and the impact of trauma on the childhood brain, he talks about how important connectedness to other people is as an antidote to trauma. And so we've got to find our communities, even if they're not at work, we've got to find our communities where we feel safe and mm-hmm. where we have trust, because that's where healing happens.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
And sometimes it can be very difficult, because I've seen so far, you know, working with men, because of this domestication and this feeling that they, you know, those expectations where they, you know, men should always be strong. Some of them were struggling, but they're not actually, you know, feel safe to actually come and talk about, you know, the everything that they're going through, because that's not expected from them. And they get, you know, they stay into this prison. And you know, by the time you realize someone has committed suicide or someone has actually done something to harm himself, so it is sometimes very difficult.
You're absolutely right
as well, because of all those expectations that are put on, you know, on people.
You are so right. And in my role working with so many really talented leaders all over the world, these issues that I'm talking about in healing at work are relevant for men and women, are relevant for every race, every country where I've spoken, that I think that the concepts are universal. And I am on this mission. My mission, my life's purpose, I know this is my God-given life purpose, is to teach self-acceptance to create a more joyful world. And that matters everywhere. I don't care who you are, what your background is. If I can help influence people feeling more self-accepting of themselves and managing those limiting beliefs and those old behaviors that we learned to survive when we were growing up and start to shift into the conscious healing career path, I do think it will affect not only our experience at work, but also our experience in life and our
clients. Oh my goodness. Susan, I can't even believe that our hour is almost gone. I'm like, where did the time go? And I'm panicking a bit. So here's what I want to do. I want to be sure that we talk about your rapid power reclaim. Yes. Because we've talked about the challenges, right? And we've learned to identify them and to see, we understand the role of fight, flight, flee, or a fawn.
Yep.
And now what do we do about it? How do we begin to take back our power in this?
Yes. So the first step is realizing that just having a new concept in our mind can change our brains. Dr. Bruce Lipton, who wrote The Biology of Belief, said that. And so just knowing that we are sometimes on the unconscious wounded career path, where the limiting beliefs, the old behaviors, all that's driving the pain and suffering we've talked about, waking up and realizing we can step onto the conscious healing career path, that's the first opportunity. And then to your point, I developed a three-step proprietary process called Rapid Power Reclaim. Three steps. So the next time that you get triggered, you have an emotional trigger. Step number one is you've got to create choice. I talk about managing the physiological response is about creating choice. When we're lost in that adrenaline of the physiological reaction, we have no choice. So step one is create choice. And the easiest way to do it, you know, when you're feeling anxious or stressed about something, you've got to process it. And I've got to get the name of this woman that was in this Amy Porterfield course, because she had so many excellent, she said, you need a process for processing life. You know, so you've got to process it. You've got to feel the emotion. Don't stuff it, let it out. I have a plastic baseball bat. I'll hit it on a couch and just get the energy out. But that allows us to create choice. The next step is to elevate your action. Rather than going into the old patterns, like me, the tap dancing people pleasing poodle, you know, trying to please everybody around her, I now think about, all right, now that I realize I'm in a bumper car moment and I have a choice, and I've managed my energy, my feelings, emotions that are coming up, what am I going to do differently? How am I going to elevate my response rather than going into my old patterns? And then finally, when we elevate our response, it could be just saying, look, we need to take a time out from this meeting. We need a break. Let's take a 10-minute break, go outside, get some fresh air, and come back. And then realize and go forward in your highest functioning adult self. The final step is when we elevate our action and we've done something differently, we have to celebrate it to integrate it. And so what I mean by that is we are literally reshaping the neural pathways in our brains when we start to look at and respond differently to those bumper car crashes when we're emotionally triggered. And so when I take a break and I go outside and I celebrate that I didn't get, you know, I realized I was getting triggered, I processed it and I responded and elevated differently. When we celebrate, and believe me, I had to work on even putting a list together of how do you actually celebrate, because I was not very good at it, right? Yeah. I was never celebrating. Celebrating is just doing something that's good for you. And doing that starts to anchor in that new response. And so that starts to shift those neural pathways. That's the promise of the rest of our life is ours. It's all grounded in science. And when we start to celebrate, we're also focusing on something positive. And the positive psychology research says if you focus on positive, the quality of your life improves. So I can go into a lot more detail on all of this. But
let me make sure we recap this, Susan. Okay, so it's create choice.
Yep.
Elevating action.
Yes.
And then celebrate and integrate.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
I love it. I love the create choice, because all of a sudden it feels freeing. We are not hostage by our past unless we allow ourselves to be. Our past is our past. It happened. But we today, how do you say it, Susan? You say that we are able to show up in our adult.
Yeah, our highest functioning adult self. Right. When I get triggered, because of course I'm human, I'm on this journey with everybody, I go, oh my gosh, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, oh, you just had a bumper car crash. What's going on? All right, you're feeling anxious, you're feeling angry, whatever. Okay, I got to get that energy out of me. Okay, now what do I do? How do I elevate my action versus going into perfectionism or proving myself or working 16 hours a day? Wow. Oh, okay, I'm going to try this. And then celebrating and anchoring it in. So yeah, it's a much better life. The conscious
healing. All right, well, let's take our coffee picture, because I forgot this last week. Roz, did you get your water? All right, that works. All right, got it. Wait, Marae, you moved. Did you get it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you. And so when we come back, let's wrap up. And final thoughts and takeaways for the show. We'll come to Marae first. We'll go to Roz and get your takeaway thoughts and what we're pouring in everyone's cup today. And then Susan, we'll come to you for closing and what you want people to take away from our conversation today. And we will start our wrap up as I look at my puppy being crazy right after this. All right. So as we wrap up and bring it to a close, Marae, what did we put in your cup today?
Oh my Lord, it was so powerful. There's so much. But you know what? What I realized, you know, listening to the conversation is that we have the power. And it comes down to, you know, the choice that, you know, the free step that you've just described as Susan, the fact that we have the choice, you know, whatever is happening around us, whatever past we have, we always have a choice. And that's really, you know, like you said, Rhonda, it gives you freedom. Mm-hmm. And obviously the other part is the celebration part as well, because sometimes we so critical of ourselves all the time. You know, anything we start to analyze and we point out all the negative and we forget to celebrate, you know, and that's a really important step as we you know, empower ourselves through this process. So really, you know, a great conversation, and I think there's so much. So those are the key thing that for me, you know, I have in my cup today.
Thank you, Marae. Roz, mm-hmm. What about you? What did we put in your cup today?
As I was listening to Susan talk about the options we have and the choices so far as what type of energy is around us. So to me, that was very important, because as we look at ourselves, she was talking about looking at ourselves every day. And so every day as we wake up, we have a choice to be, you know, in this vibration, in this energy. And then we also have the choice to cut off those things that are sucking our energy and taking our focus. So that's what I learned from Susan today. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. It's been a powerful conversation, Susan. I feel like we could have gone on for another 2 or 3 hours. So thank you for being generous with your time with us today. What would you like people to take away from this conversation? And then let us know how people can learn more about the work that you do.
Sure. I think number one, you're not alone. You know, that people show up to, I love positive toxicity. That's one of the things I'm taking away in my cup. You are not alone. If you're struggling with limiting beliefs and behavior patterns that are wearing you out, damaged is not doomed. And the rest of your life is yours. And the principles, either through the Healing at Work book, I have a mini course on managing bumper car moments, very inexpensive. I have a 6-week online self-study course. I have all kinds of tools, high value, to help support people as they're shifting from that unconscious wounded career path to the conscious healing career path. And it's possible for every one of us. And it's such a better place to be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Susan, for being here. You know, as I think about my last drop, I think about those choices that we have. And let me just go back for a second. So Dia said, that's great. Respected, Marae Tulakima. Congratulations. We had Lori Shanahan, who said, this was excellent. Thank you so much for joining, Lori. Mom said, great show as always. Welcome back, Roz. And then Regina said, the show was amazing. So many golden nuggets. Definitely has to replay and ponder. Thank you, Susan. And thank you, ladies. Really good. For me, I think my last drop for today is, what if we didn't have to wait for healing, right? There's this conventional wisdom that just wait and the healing will happen. What if we didn't wait? What if we chose not to wait, and instead we chose to create those healing moments from our everyday experiences? Every single day we have the opportunity to heal. That's my takeaway from our conversation today and from learning about the work that you do in the world. So thank you so much for that, Susan. It's been a real pleasure having you join us at the coffee table.
Thank you so much. And you summarized it, which is, the workplace can be your own laboratory for emotional healing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So thank you, everybody out there, for watching and tuning in to another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda show. We are always excited to be back with you and hear your thoughts and comments as well. We'll see you back here next week, same time, same station, on our new day and time, Thursdays at 9 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Eastern. For my co-host and guest, stay tuned for just a minute. For everyone else, we will see you next week. Mm-hmm. Take care, everybody.